Hi, my name is Vanessa Gonzalez. I'm 28 years old. I'm an educator and I love animals.
Hi, my name is SBES. I'm 12 years old and I'm in sixth grade. One of my special skills is doing cheerleading at CYC All-Stars.
My name is Farida Mashak. I'm 10 years old. I'm in fourth grade and I do competitive cheer at CYC.
Hi, Marita. I am a retired teacher. I'm 83 years old. I like to spend a lot of time reading, and I certainly am waiting for the nice weather to do some gardening.
And my name is Delilah Shara-Sabota. I'm 9 years old, and I'm in third grade, and my special skill is doing cheerleading.
And you're listening to an International Women's Day special on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to another special International Women's Day Hour of Programming. I'm Sharon Sabota, and I'll be with you until 7 o'clock today. This hour, we're going to spend time with Betty Reed Soskin, her daughter Diara Reed, and granddaughter Aliana Reed, as they race with time to bring another dimension of the now 102-year-old trailblazer Betty's story to life in the forthcoming film and soon-to-open play, Sign My Name to Freedom.
I knew my slave ancestor. I knew her until I was 27 years old when she died, and she died at 102.
And that's your great-grandmother?
My great-grandmother.
That's Betty Reed Soskin, who is now herself 102 years old.
I knew her, and all of the American history from the Dred Scott decision to Black Lives Matter is encapsulated in the voices of my great-grandmother, my mother, and myself. Because we lived all of that history from 1846 to the present time.
And in the spirit of keeping stories and narratives alive across generations and illuminating parts of the story that have been untold, Betty's daughter, Diara, and granddaughter, Aliana, are stepping up.
My name is Diara Malik Kitty Reed, and I am Aliana's mother and Betty's daughter. And I am not 102.
Diara Reed is, however, Betty's full-time caretaker.
My name is Aliana Reed. I'm Betty's granddaughter, Diara's daughter, and I'm also the associate producer on the upcoming documentary on my grandmother. The working title is Sign My Name to Freedom, The Lost Music of Betty Reed Soskin.
I first met Betty Reed Soskin, or as she prefers to be called, Betty, around the time she began her career as a park ranger at the Rosie the Riveter National Historic Park in Richmond when she was around 85 years old. I've been following her and interviewing her ever since. Because Betty knows that the way history is written and remembered depends on who is at the table, writing and remembering it, she invited herself to the table to remember the more inclusive story of the Rosie the Riveter era, one that included segregation and oppression for women of color.
The sites that formed the park were all sites of racial segregation. There was nobody in that room that had any reason to know that but me. And I realized there was no intention to leave my history out, but my history would never be told, and that there were so many stories that were not being told. There's a rich Mexican-American history. There's a Japanese-American history. This was all American history. And so I became actively involved in the early plans to be sure that that history was not omitted. At this point, I'm working a 5-hour day, 5 days a week. I give 3 to 5 presentations in our little theater. Little, because it's only a 48 seat. I sell out like Hamilton, you know. It is my honor to present to you the President of the United States.
Thank you, Betty, for that introduction, for your extraordinary service.
I am still having first experiences at 96. I wake up every morning and shoot out of bed because I can't wait to see what next week is. I don't expect to retire at all. I'm going to go straight from the park to the cemetery.
That's an excerpt from the Feminist Makers Project that Betty was featured in when she was 96 years old. Although Betty ultimately did retire at the age of 100, she still has more stories to tell and more dimensions of her life story that many of us had never heard of until recently.
Many of you know me as a park ranger, but there's a part of my life that I've kept hidden for half a century.
Little boy black. I packed Secret Betty up in boxes and reel-to-reel tapes. No one in my life knew that I had been a singer or that I had written music. I talk about, you know, suffering a mental break, but I don't give anybody the reasons why. But the music saved me. It really did. We were the first family of color in Walnut Creek.
Why must my mind?
And I think that had I known the price my kids would have to pay before we moved in, just forward. I don't really know if I'd have put them through that.
Does my dream?
I was documenting all of those events that we were experiencing as a country and that I was experiencing in isolation. But they ring as true for me now as they did when I wrote them.
Feel the fire.
Maybe this releasing of the music to the public is a way of making myself whole. And maybe I need to do that before I die.
I've been signed my name to freedom.
That's audio from the trailer of the documentary Sign My Name to Freedom, which is being directed by Brian Gibble with the help of Aliana Reed, who is associate producer. The film production crew is currently undergoing a GoFundMe campaign in hopes of raising enough funds to finish the final editing of this project in Betty Reed Soskin's lifetime. In the meantime, later this month, there's also going to be a theatrical performance of Sign My Name to Freedom at ZSpace Theater in San Francisco. At 102, Betty is a little less verbose than she once was, but at her core, she's the kind of orator that can keep an audience sitting on the edges of their seats, leaning into her every word. In 2011, when I interviewed her inside of her Richmond home as I was pregnant with my first daughter, she shared snippets of her blog that she was writing to keep her story alive for her own children, and gave me a CD with some songs that she'd once sang. The title of one of her songs, Sign My Name to Freedom, became the title of her book that was published in 2018. That year, weeks after my own father died, Betty sat beside me at St. Mary's College of California for her very first book event and revealed how her journey to self-discovery began when she lost the three most important men in her life.
I was married at 20 to Mel Reed, a man who I met at 14. I was 14, he was 17. He was, at that point, I think, in his senior year at the University of San Francisco. That marriage lasted for about 35 years, produced four children, and ended when I was about 49, late 40s. And my second marriage was to Bill Soskin, who was Dr. William F. Soskin, an illustrious professor from the University of California, research psychologist. That marriage made me a faculty wife on the university campus, and I got a non-traditional PhD, which we called the pillow PhD. That was an amazing period of travel and exposures that I grew in off new edges that I didn't even know existed before then. All of those men, my father, whom I loved dearly, my first husband, and my second husband all died in the year 1987, within 3 months. And I had been completely defined by the men in my life. I had no idea, because I didn't go to college, which meant that I had never had life as a woman before I became a mother. So that period that you people who are on campus live, I had never lived through until I was 50. And it wasn't until that period of intense grief for about 3 months And then right behind that was this burst of emancipation. And I've been spinning in space ever since, being Betty the individual, being the woman in me. And I think that now that I'm 96, I have the distinct feeling that I'm being all of the women that I ever was. Right now, that I'm using everything that I ever had, everything that I ever learned, and that each of the women that I have been is triggered either by songs, by something I read, by a snatch of music, by something one of my kids says, and all of the affect of that period comes. It has led to a 96-year-old, very, very rich life, because I'm in all of those women right now.
The part of Betty's story that had been far less amplified is that of her music.
I'm Betty Reed Soskin, and I guess I am maybe the star of this, the whole thing.
Tell me a little bit about the film that you are the star of.
I guess it's something that started some years ago when the filmmaker discovered, in searching through my papers, a packet of
your music. Yeah, and I remember, I was thinking, Betty, I first interviewed you in your home about almost 13 years ago, because I was pregnant with my daughter, who's now 12. And you showed me some of your music, and you told me that this was something that you had done for fun.
Yes.
Filmmaker Brian Gibble originally planned on making a short film about the Reed Record Store in Berkeley, which was one of the first Black-owned businesses in California, until he discovered Betty's music, which sent him in another direction.
It was something that really captivated me. I knew at that point that for sure I wanted to make a film about that aspect of her life.
Aliana Reed says that by becoming associate producer of the film, she's been able to strengthen her relationship with her grandma and see her in a new light.
I joined the film almost a year ago now, but the actual beginnings of the film, I believe, started in 2016. At the time, I was just a sophomore in college studying film, but every single time there was like a big event going on with my grandmother and I could attend, there was this film crew led by Brian Gibble, and over the years got pretty acquainted with our family. We're all really good friends with Brian, but this overall experience joining the team has been really great for me personally. The beginnings of my joining the team, I was just the post-production assistant, and I was just looking over footage over like the past 6 years or so. And I was able to learn about my grandmother outside of just being my grandma, which was really great. We reviewed a lot of the footage together, and it brought us a lot closer. At the time, I was 27 years old and feeling a lot more comfortable in my own womanhood and feeling mature enough to have conversations with my 101-year-old grandmother at the time, because 75 years is quite the age gap to have a relationship. And I feel like joining the project and this time in my life and being fortunate enough to still have my grandmother around was kind of kismet almost. And I've been able to build a relationship with my grandma through this film that I don't know if I would have had the courage to try to build with her outside of that. It was a very nice excuse.
Talk a little bit about the Betty Reed Soskin you've known growing up and the contrast. What are some of the things that you've discovered about this wonderful woman who happens to be your grandmother?
As I said before, there's a 75-year age gap between my grandma and I. You know, her kids had moved out of the house by the time she was in her 50s. So, you know, children was long past a part of her life by the time I came around. And my grandma, you know, I saw her at birthdays and holidays, recitals, etc., occasional dinners. And she was just, you know, just the grandma who would give me birthday presents and Christmas presents. And every once in a while would end up in the news for reasons that I didn't totally understand as a child. And it wasn't until I became like maybe middle school age and teenaged when she started working for the Park Service that I started actually hearing my grandmother's voice outside of just being grandma in her role as a park ranger, and started kind of harboring this almost like a fan feeling about my grandma. But our relationship had always been, you know, just like grandmother, granddaughter, not particularly close. And I kind of learned a lot about my grandma through her work with the Park Service and later on her in-person talks that she would do around the country. I was fortunate enough to accompany her with a few of those, and then her book. And it wasn't until I was like 22 years old that she and I had our first woman-to-woman conversation. And she and I have talked about this a few times now, that having that one conversation was really important to me, but I just craved so much to have more of those conversations with her. I think it's important to say that most of my adulthood, I've lived in Southern California. So as I became more mature, my availability to my grandmother became more and more sparse. It became even more so just holidays, not so much those like impromptu dinners or birthdays, because we had about like 400 miles apart from each other. And because of this project, I had an excuse to go up and visit my grandma like almost once a month last year and talk about her life and also introduce her to myself, who I had become in almost a 10-year span since moving to Southern California and moving away from home and the becoming an adult and all of those other things. And it's been, this past year has really been a big growth for my relationship with my grandma, which I truly appreciate and cherish so much, that that one conversation has grown into a whole year of memories.
Kind of talk us through some of the songs that we're going to see in the film and the era of life now that you've gotten more in the thick of the making of the film.
Yeah, so the actual music explores her time between, I believe, the 60s and the 70s, which correlates with a lot of her work with the Unitarian Church and activism, the civil rights movement. She has described the music as both autobiographical, but also encapsulating her firsthand experience in the civil rights movement, or also what she was witnessing just as a person in that time. So both her own story, but then also reflecting upon the world around her. Some of the core songs that are featured in the film, one of the biggest ones is Your Hand in Mine, which is described by my grandmother as a hand-holding song to take the place of We Shall Overcome, which was taken from the civil rights movement and misused by Lyndon B. Johnson after his efforts to, I believe it was barring people from registering to vote, hence the Freedom Riders and Freedom Summer, which my grandma was very upset by, that he had used that term and a song that the civil rights movement had used to bring people together, and decided that she was going to replace it. She also knew someone personally, the daughter of a friend of hers from the Unitarian Church, Susan Sanford, had decided to postpone her enrollment to UC Berkeley so she can join the folks, the Freedom Riders, to help register people to vote. Those are just like little snippets of how, you know, my grandmother had witnessed history and had written music about it, Your Hand in Mine. And then also another song also inspired by the same instance in time, Sign My Name to Freedom, which her book is titled after, this upcoming play about my grandmother's life. It's also called that. And to avoid confusion, we're debating on whether or not the film's going to be named the same thing. But as of right now, it's the name of the film. And there's plenty of other songs that she's written that are even more personal, that illustrates her time in Walnut Creek, being one of the first families to integrate the neighborhoods in the Mount Diablo area, in Walnut Creek specifically, and talking about her time as a mother of Black children in this white neighborhood, and how that heavily impacted her and her worries, and how her decision as a mother had affected her children. There's just so many parts of this story. It's interesting to look at because, you know, Betty's my grandma, but also at the same time, looking at it in a film scope of things, Betty as a character is just so enticing, but also relatable. Her story and overall journey is so timeless, and in the struggles that she faces as a mother, the struggles that she faces as a woman, and her identity, trying to figure out, you know, Betty talks about all the different Bettys that she's been, you know, younger Betty, wife Betty, mother Betty, activist Betty. What I think is so great about her music, and also just being able to capture her 90s, that point in time where she reflects on all of her identities, and just it kind of melts together into this one piece that we're making into a film, is both beautiful to witness and also amazing for me personally to be a part of, to help tell that story. As somebody who is in love with film specifically for characters, there's no way that I could ever fall in love with a character more than my grandma. And it's both amazing to feel honored to be her granddaughter, but also at the same time, to feel honored to know Betty Reed Soskin the way that I do, because she's an incredible woman. And I've spent way too long of my adult life just kind of admiring from afar, and being able to kind of gush over my grandmother as in her 100s, with her at on her bedside. And also another remarkable thing about my grandma is she never is able to really appreciate herself in the present. It's always in retrospect. In her interviews with her in her 90s, she talks about how surprised and how amazing she was in her 40s and 50s, and how her in her 90s doesn't compare. And now I'm talking to her in her 100s, just marveling at herself in her 90s. And I know I was there next to her half the time, you know, at these speaking engagements in her 90s, and just wondering, why are people so just enthralled by me? I don't get it. I don't get the hype. But now she understands it. And even to this day, I still have to remind her that at over 100, she's still very exceptional. And that's really, honestly, one of the easiest jobs to do is can just tell Betty Reed Soskin how amazing she is, but also that it's super necessary. I think we all need to be given our flowers now, and now is the time to celebrate Betty even to this day.
And Diarra, you've been by your mom's side as her caretaker for a long time and accompanying her to different events. One of the things that you talked about with me is the way that she put her music career and some of her own personal things aside so that she could mother her children. Can you talk about that with us a little bit?
That was like, you know, I was probably like, oh goodness, 12, 13 when that was coming around. So it wasn't so much of a situation where I was that aware of. I knew about my mother's music because we would always, you know, wherever she was singing different things, we would accompany her. And she'd always be asked to, you know, sing a song here at this hootenanny or this church service or this get together. And of course we'd be there too. So we knew about my mother's music, and we knew there was something special about it because people were just like, wow, your mother is just incredible. We're like, yeah, really? You know, because, you know, that's mom, you know? You know, you grow up, you hear all, you know, and you know the inside story. So it wasn't so much that I knew about her having the chance to become a professional singer. I kind of heard a little bit about after the decision that she wasn't going to do it. Didn't know beforehand that she was leaving town for this and she was going here. I had no idea until later years.
Tiara Reed says there's a long tradition of late beginnings, reinvention, and self-discovery in later life. In talking about this, she shares her own story as a transgender woman who found her true identity in her 60s.
I was daddy's boy, totally. I was little Mel. Everything about me was little. I looked just like my father, acted just like my father. My father and I were very, very close. Even when my parents separated, I was around my father 24/7. So my relationship with my mother was kind of like Aliana's relationship when she moved down to college, you know, saw her at, you know, Christmas and family gatherings, but we didn't hang out that much. And then when I decided to get out of construction and come back and into the family store, we kind of like bump heads, who's going to do what. And then finally she decided, well, okay, you can have this. I'm going to go off and do something else. So I can really say that, you know, we weren't really close as, you know, sibling and mother. But when she got into the park service, I was busy with the store. And I wasn't really, you know, kind of paying attention to who she was becoming, or she'd want to come and share about, the, you know, the things that she was contributing, how important they were. And I was, yeah, okay, mom. I realized at this point now, watching her since she had a stroke in 2019, I had to become her caregiver, which terrified my former self. And I had just transitioned in August of 2018. So I was a real, real newbie and like very vulnerable and not very confident in my transition at that point. And I
and
was
then your mom had to readjust to you in this identity, right?
Yeah, I mean, my oldest brother was gay, so she knew about gay, but she didn't know about identity. It was something that she had to learn and kind of grasp. And, you know, she went through her mourning of David, and she didn't really know Dayara yet. But we've been together for 4.5 years plus. I was, like, taking over her local, managing her interviews and her career, which was booming. Even after her stroke, we made trips together. And of last year or so, everybody's been like, wow, you look just like your mother. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm Lil Mel, you know? I'm like, no, that can't be. But then I started thinking about things. It says, my mom started her new career when she was 85. I started my new life when I was 66. So it's kind of like, oh God, is this in the DNA? This time I've been able to spend with her, I've gotten to know Betty as Betty and Betty as a woman. And I can appreciate just how she rolls. I mean, she's so unique and I can take so much from that. I've gotten to know her really for the first time. At this point, we're inseparable. We kind of like, you know, have the same heartbeat.
At the age of 66, you were transitioning into your identity as Tiara, right?
Right. I started my life at a late age too, just like she started hers.
Betty, what's your favorite thing about having Tiara by your side all the time?
I worry about her.
Oh, you worry about her?
I worry that my prolonged life is affecting hers, and that's something I hadn't anticipated.
I got time, and this is a time I need to cherish.
Tiara, I remember one particular story you shared with me where your mom was maybe competing in a contest and then didn't do the final step and instead came back home.
Well, that was her audition to be, you know, a professional singer.
Can you tell us that story?
Well, what I got from its third or fourth hand was she was basically being groomed to like be in the vein of Nancy Wilson, you know, kind of a new jazz singer. She flew into Boston or, you know, Massachusetts and was doing practice sessions with a band and was getting ready for a audition at the Village Gate, and they were ready to put money behind her and really go, I mean, to be a national artist. And on the eve, she's decided that's not what she wanted, that she was more important for her to be a mother of four than a singer. So she packed up and came home.
How do you feel when you imagine the contrast between those two options that were in front of her and where she landed?
Well, I think it would have taken our family in a much different direction too.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was a decision that she made for the family, what was best for the family and not what was best for her.
No. I really don't have any regrets. I just don't. I've never had any.
I think that it was critical that she made that decision. There's enough stories about professional artists and how their family relationships were good ones.
You're listening to an International Women's Day special on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org.
One of the things that Aliana Reed says she loves most about her grandmother's story is the way in which she defies the narrative that women have a shelf life.
I think a lot of people my age were confronted with actual aging once we got to about our mid-20s. All of a sudden, we aren't the youngest adults anymore and have to confront like how we're going to settle down and what we're going to do with the rest of our lives. And this idea that we have to have everything figured out by the time we're 30, or set up in a way that by the time we're 30, we're pretty much settled down and ready when we get to our 40s. And we don't really think past that entirely. And to have this woman who has given us stories and materials of several decades of her life, and each decade being equally as rich, is so inspiring. I know, especially as a woman, with this idea that women have a shelf life, you know, around having children or desirability to stay young. And we kind of are in a time where we are especially pushing back around that. I think, you know, feminists and women in general, we've been pushing back about that for years, but I think I'm seeing a very special trend amongst my generation where things like having a life past 50 is inspiring and makes us excited about getting older, because that's just the cliche for women, is dreading getting older. And I think Betty is an amazing example to not be afraid of that. I know that has been a really important thing for me to understand, you know, at 28 years old, to just kind of enjoy and slow down and not think that I'm wasting time, that I have to squeeze everything in my youth. And I think that's also something that a lot of women, that part of her story is resonating with them. I think that's one of the most important parts for me to share in releasing this film.
Deara Reed says music is ultimately the thing that inspired Betty to save herself when she was struggling emotionally, and that her mother can serve as a model for anyone.
My mother's music came out of a mental breakdown. It was therapeutic. First, she was a painter. She painted. We have paintings all over. Well, we used to have them all over the house. Still have a few of them around. And then she got into music. And that is how she healed herself. So it wasn't just creating music about the times and the days and things. It was more like centering herself and getting her back into life. So, you know, her music was much more therapeutic and rich for her experience. And it just so happened it captured those times, which are relevant to today. You know, her music is timeless. The topics and everything she wrote about, you would think that they were just written yesterday, because they apply right now. What I get from that is, like the phoenix, even from the ashes, you can rise. And I've seen my mother rise over and over and over. When her and my father broke up, things weren't great. But she rose, and she kept going. She went into the store when my father had a diabetic stroke and sitting in the back, and took over that and cleaned up the store and cleaned up the neighborhood, and she just kept going. And from there, she went into, you know, service with the, you know, with Dion Aaron or California State Assemblywoman and Lonnie Hancock, and then to the Park Service. She just keeps recreating herself. And that's what I take back from her, is that it's never too late, even when times are horrible, a little bit of sunshine there that you can rebuild everything. And she's done it over and over. And that's what amazes me. And for me, as far as the plight of womanhood, I mean, I'm really freshly in that at this point. But oppression is something that I've dealt with all my life. It's probably more oppressive now than it's ever been. So as far as what women should be or do, I mean, my whole existence is about resistance. You know, I'm not even supposed to be here. But every day I'm here, and every day I'm loud, and every day I'm proud, whether it be from being African-American, or if it's being trans, or it's being a woman, that's what I'm going to be. I don't sign up to how I should be. Because if I did, I never would have transitioned. And I never would have found myself, my true self. I didn't decide to be trans. I discovered I was trans.
And one of the things that you told me is that David, the person who was David, wouldn't have been able to probably be a caretaker. But it works really well for Diarra.
Because once I realized who I really was, Diarra had the capacity to be empathetic and to be a caretaker. David wasn't a caretaker. David was more a creator. I mean, David was a straight up dude. And I can look now. I mean, I think that's the beauty of being trans, is that, you know, you can see the world from both sides because you've lived it. Other people cannot even comprehend what that is like. I mean, now that I look back at my former self, I cringe in a lot of situations. I was like, wow. I'm free of all the chains and stereotypes of what you're supposed to be. So as far as being a woman, I'm going to be the kind of woman that makes me happy. And I don't even care about the rest.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about the working title, because it sounds like, Aliana, you might be considering another option, but the Sign My Name to Freedom sounds like there's a certain amount of freedom in showing up as your authentic self, whether it's your age, your gender identity, or something else. Aliana, give us a teaser for what we can expect when we get to see the film, and also what you're hoping that viewers will take away from the film.
Very obviously, I have these two amazing trailblazers of women to give me examples in my own growth as a human being. And I want to share that with the world. That's one of the more important parts about, you know, people seeing this film, and so many people have already seen snippets of Betty's speaking for, you know, between 1 minute or 20 minute talks that she's had. And people have come up to me or commented on our social media saying that they see themselves in Betty. I want to give more. I think she has so much to offer all of us in terms of learning and developing continuously. I think that's a part of what she brought to her work at the National Park Service. She's a big advocate of America reflecting upon our history authentically and taking that information and growing from that. I think that's what she's done in her personal life, taking what she's learned over the years and applying it to better herself and evolve in these other identities that she's had, and to always be improving. There isn't some final point in life that we all need to live and then just sit there until retirement. Betty doesn't do that. And I think that we all should have that type of aspiration in our own personal growth. As far as what the film is about, what I can tell you, the film spans present day filming with Betty, where I think we meet her in her like 94 years old. And at this time, she's probably in the thick of her national recognition. She's just met the Obamas and was presented the presidential coin kind of at the height of her park ranger career. While that is happening, in doing the research of the film, recordings of her old music had been revealed, and start going down memory lane of previous Betty, who had been a musician who never got the limelight and had been kept away in a box for 50 years. And having this booming celebrity, Betty, reflecting upon that other time in her life, possibly another storyline that she could have had as a person, being a musician instead, and reconnecting with that music and finding new importance for that music in her present day. It's kind of this really rich melting pot of present Betty and past Betty kind of coming together and just really getting a whole encompassing view of Betty Reed Soskin is what the movie is essentially about, and what our goal is to share Betty with the world.
I ended the interview by asking the three generations of women in Betty Reed Soskin's family the infamous question about the most important lesson that they've learned so far on their life journeys. Perhaps not surprisingly, their answers echoed one another. Betty, I'll remind you of two of the lessons you've told me. You said it's never too late. So if there's something you want to do, you should always try that, no matter what age you are. And you've always said that it's a both and world. But yeah, what is your most important lesson that you've learned until now at the age of 102, Betty?
That there are no answers.
I got it, Mom.
Okay.
I got it. You know, after being with her, this is my mantra also. I've adopted it cross-generational. What's most important in life are the questions.
Yes.
And not the answers. Because answers change in time. Mm-hmm. And questions are the only way that we evolve.
Yeah, it's true.
So always ask. Keep asking. And yes. Don't settle at any time for the answers. Because the answers are only temporary.
Yes, that's true.
Did you say don't settle at any time for the answers?
Yes.
I love it. And Diara, do you want to add anything about your most important life lesson?
That is it.
You're sharing it with your mom. I like it.
You know, I mean, you can't be more profound than that.
That's pretty profound.
So to my daughter, good luck.
All right, Aliana. And for you, thinking about you as the granddaughter of this amazing woman and the daughter of an amazing woman and an amazing person in your own right, think, and somebody who's working on a big film right now, what would you say your most important lesson would be so far?
I really hope that this doesn't come off as a cop-out, but I mean, these are the two women that influenced who I am today. And if anything's going to teach me, be big lessons of what I've learned up until this point would be to keep asking questions, to not settle for one answer. That's the number one way to make sure that you don't stay stagnant. Challenge yourself for new answers, but you know, yes. Reference those questions that got you there. I can't agree more.
That's great.
And there's only one other thing that competes with that. It's more of the way my mother rolls in her life is an example to me and to my daughter. My mother lives in the moment. She yes. does not think about yesterday, and she sure is not considering tomorrow. The only important thing, time, is right now.
That's true. That's true.
And I take that to heart.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I think we can all learn from that and at least continue to strive for that. Aliana and Diara Reed, thank you so much. And Betty Reed Soskin, thank you so much for taking time out of your day today.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
To learn more about the forthcoming film, Sign My Name to Freedom, or to link up to the pathway to make a tax-deductible donation to help this film come to fruition in Betty Reed Soskin's lifetime, you can visit signmynametofreedom.com. In the meantime, even if we'll need to wait a little bit longer to see Betty's story roll out on the big screen, we don't have to wait much longer to see the theatrical version of it come to the stage at Z Space Theater in San Francisco. I spoke with Elizabeth Carter, who's directing the play that'll come out later this month. Play director Elizabeth Carter says she hopes that the audiences who engage with the play will be inspired by Betty's example of living a life in alignment with her values
for more than a century.
She says in her book very early on that she never wanted to do things that were against her values. And she found a way to kind of move through the world and not contradict those values for herself, even in situations that were really difficult. And she talks about the Pledge of Allegiance and having a moment of not saying certain words because they did not uphold with her values until she could say it when she was at President Obama's inauguration. So there is this like way of, I see that as great strength and great modeling, that when asked or when she shows up and takes an opportunity, she says, no, that's against my values. This is not true. This is not what I know to be true. You are not telling the whole truth. And so that's how she doesn't lie. She doesn't try ever to misrepresent herself. She speaks the truth. And sometimes that, and often that means speaking the truth to power in situations where then people amazingly actually often, especially as she got older, really listened. And it didn't mean it was easy. It wasn't like she just raised her hand and said something. She raised her hand and said something and said it again and said it again and said it again until people were like, oh, she's not going away. Or maybe she actually has something to say that's really important. So in every step of her life, creating a USO for Black shipyard workers so that they had a place to socialize and be, creating a record store with her first husband so that we had a place for our music, right? In a time when those records weren't being sold in other places. In every step of her life, she just kept showing up and creating a space for us.
So if you are going to give sort of the elevator pitch for what we could expect with this this is actually the play we're talking about. Right.
What would you say to prospective audiences?
Well, imagine a time when you hit a critical moment in your life that shakes you a bit to your core, and you are able to go back and revisit all of your former selves and revisit your life to reparent yourself, to bring your disparate selves together to unify. I think that this play is uplifting and inspirational, but it's also very personal. And I think we can all see ourselves within it. You're gonna see music, you're gonna hear music, I won't see music. You're gonna hear music that evokes really strong feelings, really strong images. And hopefully by the time you walk out of there, you're going to be ready to do something with your life if you haven't already. There will be people up in the air. There will be people down on the ground. But really for me, I think the thing that you'll get out of it is a sense of the scope and breadth of Betty's life, but also how that's a model for us to move forward in our own lives.
I love that. Yeah. And then how does the play relate to Brian Gibbel's film? Are you all communicating? Is it a completely separate entity?
Completely separate entities. So we're so excited and totally cheering on the film. And it's amazing that they're both like happening at the same time. So it's like a Betty Fest. Which is like pretty fantastic.
And I love this too, because film, you know, it's a different medium than play. So why is it important, do you think, to have both versions available or both versions in the making right now as we speak?
Well, I think as my understanding is that Brian's film is like a little bit more of a documentary, which is like a beautiful, tangible thing to like really hear Betty speak about her own words. And I mean, her own music, her own life, and to see all these wonderful photographs, which we also have access to through Jamie Zimmer. And one of the things that I think is wonderful is like to have that really visceral, way of experiencing it through film, and then to take this extrapolation, which theater is really about us being inside of it, right? It's about the relationship. So film is something you watch and you engage with, but theater is really about how we engage with the actors on stage and that interchange that is like we're all creating it together. And so there's something really magical about theater, and that performance only lasts for one moment, right? And it's being very present, like Betty, right? We're present in this moment for that time in that building together, making something magical, and then it's gone. And then the next night, it'll be there, but it'll be slightly different because the people who are meeting it and the actors on stage are having their own unique interchange. Plus, there's something wonderful about theater that you can make something that is magical in a way that is very different from film. Because we suspend our disbelief, we can be very theatrical and we can sort of make a small moment something really big. We can be playful in a way to allow like an entryway into that part of the story. So I think that's one of the reasons to go see a play is the world is sort of bigger in some ways than you might imagine, than a film. Films can be very realistic, not all film, but theater is magical and allows you the expansion in your brain to bridge the gaps.
Carter says there's two main takeaways she's learned from working on this theater project.
Two things: how to love all the pieces of ourselves because they make us who we are, and that development and growth of through our stages of life is like the greatest gift. And it makes me wonder where I'm going to go in my life because I don't know. And the second thing I would say is to always be present, just to be able to be present in the moment and show up fully. That is, I think, the gift for me right now, is to remind myself I'm doing this thing right now and it's really beautiful and important and people need to hear it. And so my gift is to make this story, you know, so that people can know her better in a different kind of way. They can feel her music. They can feel her story. That feels like a piece of activism in itself.
A theater performance will begin when and where and how do we get the tickets, all the good stuff.
Great. You can go to sfbatco.org to buy tickets. Opening night is almost sold out. So if you want a good opening, which is March 29th, it runs through April 13th. And it's at the Z Space in San Francisco, which I believe is 17th in Florida. But it's Z Space in San Francisco, and it's a wonderful space that I think you'll really enjoy. It's a big theater, so I'm really excited to fill it up. So please come check it out. We've got 5 fabulous actors, 7 dancers, 3 aerialists, 4-piece band. It's going to be magic.
Thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy evening to talk.
I'm so grateful to get the word out about this film, this play, and the really wonderful work that SF Batco has done in developing it, and Jamie Zimmer for the concept, and her relationship with Betty. Everyone I talk to is really excited about it. And I just want everyone to be out there and to celebrate her. And I think she's coming to opening, so.
Fingers crossed. Fingers
crossed.
Anything else you want to add before we wrap?
No, thank you so much for having me. What a joy to talk about this and talk about all the work. And I just want to elevate, you know, I really want to elevate Black women's voices at this time in our world is really, and for, you know, we're in Women's History Month. So I love the intersectionality of it all. And I appreciate you inviting me on.
And that was Elizabeth Carter, the director of the theatrical version of Sign My Name to Freedom, a musical about the life of Betty Reed Soskin.
To learn more or get tickets for the play, you can visit sfbatco, that's sfbatco.org. And that brings us near the end of this particular hour of the special International Women's Day edition of the Weekend Evening News. I want to thank the incredible team of women that has produced today's special programming and our interim general manager, Antonio, for his support as well. I also want to thank my own children, SB and Delilah, for putting up with me as a single working mom who's always spread a little bit too thin. And I want to wish my niece, Ella Splinter, who shares a birthday with International Women's Day, a very happy birthday. I'm Sharon Sabota, and it's been a pleasure to be with you this evening. Please stay tuned for some more International Women's Day programming, and we'll roll out with Betty Reed Soskin's Sign My Name to Freedom.
Monday morning, streets are bare. Seems as how they don't want me nowhere. Since I went to the courthouse and signed my name to freedom. Daughter say, mustn't run. Sound of trumpets, the kingdom's come. Mama, go to the courthouse. Got to sign your name to freedom. Fields of fire, cotton flaming. Beneath the summer sky, shrouds of white, no name naming, dead oh no, just dream can't die. Churches burn, deacon dead, still I know. It's like daughter said, ain't no turning back now. I done signed my name to freedom. Young folks here around my table talking through the night. Faces here I can't label. Brown ones blending with the white. Sunday morning, church ain't there. Bombed it Wednesday, but I can't care. God was down at the courthouse day I signed my name to freedom. My Lord was down at the courthouse day I signed my name.